For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good evening. I'm Douglas Floyd. I am the president of the board of directors and the temple director at Ancient Dragon Zen Gate. Our teacher, Taigen Dan Layton, recently began a six-month sabbatical, so that's why I'm talking tonight. We are sharing responsibility for giving these Dharma talks among a good group of Sangha members, and that's working out pretty well. Thank you for all for being here. For the audience at home, we have a good group of people from McCormick Seminary coming to experience Zazen and just to observe a service and to participate in this gathering. And so for that reason, I had us chant Fukan Zazengi, the universally recommended instructions for Zazen, which is an essay that Ehe Dogen, the founder of our branch of Zen Buddhism, started in Japan in the 13th century. And he continued to write different versions of it. He revised it over his life. So he thought it was very important. Dogen is certainly the leading thinker of Soto Zen, our branch of Zen. Not only the leading he's the leading thinker as well as the founder of Soto Zen. And he's particularly noteworthy in taking a fairly radical stance on the significance of Zazen meditation. For him, Zazen meditation was itself the enactment, the embodiment, the expression of enlightenment, of awakened mind. So he had a very different understanding of what we're doing when we sit on a cushion. And it came from, I think it had to come from an experience he had in his very earliest days as a young monk. You know, back then they would, boys would leave their home and they'd become a monk at 8, 10, 12. And Dogen, as a very young monk in the monastery, raised the question for himself that we are all part of ultimate reality, which is boundless, expansive, all-pervading, fluid, transparent. While it encompasses all things, there are no things. There is nothing fixed. There's nothing that doesn't change constantly, nothing that doesn't exist as a result of causes and conditions of everything else in the world and that exists only in relation to everything else. And if it's perfect, and if it's free and peaceful, as the sutras said, well then why do we have to practice? Why do we sit on a cushion with achy knees and sore backs and spend a lot of time doing this when there are lots of other things we could be doing? And the answer I think he came to was essentially the one that all Buddhists of whatever school have taken, and that is that, well, that's all very nice, but our life is filled with dukkha, which is translated in English generally as suffering, and that's true in part, but it's not a really good translation of it. Dukkha is the sense that nothing measures up. Everything that we experience is, or most of our life in some senses, characterized by a feeling of deficiency. Things, life just does not measure up. And that relates to automatic processes in our mind. The way we relate to the world, we have a very confused understanding of who we are. And there are processes that take place without, for the most part, our being aware of them. So that we go through our life getting attached to, clinging aggressively to any experience, whether that's a sensory experience or a situation or a dream or a memory or any other sort of mental object. We will relate to that as either something that can harm us or that can do something for us. It can bring us pleasure or security or a sense that this is the way things are supposed to be. And that, so that's, we go through life in two ways. One is there's an intense amount and large amount of anxiety. But also as we experience our life and the things and people in our life in that way, as things and people we need or things and people that we want, people and things who cause we're afraid of, we project these feelings upon them and we focus on them, and that creates this narrow, abstracted view of the world where we're not aware of the fullness of life, but just this relationship, that out there, this fixed object of my desire or my fear and me, which is in conflict with what the sutras would tell us the world is really like, that expansive, open, fluid reality with no boundaries. Now we've created this sense of being this fixed entity ourselves, surrounded by other entities, fixed entities that are in some way either something good for us or that are harmful to us. Buddhism has taken, in all schools, has said there are various ways to deal with that. There is aspects of life. One is we need to live a moral life and live for the benefit of others. Another is we need to practice meditation, and through the practice of meditation we practice wisdom that allows us to see through the confusion and to loosen the grasp of this clinging to things so that we don't live in this constant pushing away of experience or grabbing onto it and pulling it to us. And traditionally, in India and in China as well, the practice was that you would practice meditation by practicing concentration on some object to calm the mind. And having calmed the mind, it would be prepared for gaining insight into the world and perhaps some transformative experience. And that's certainly the case in the other main school of Zen in Japan, Rinzai Buddhism, which came to Japan from China in the same way Soto Zen did. Rinzai Zen, in Rinzai Zen, you will practice Zazen frequently concentrating on a phrase or a word from a story, a teaching story. And by practicing on that, settling the mind, opening the mind to an experience, a transformative experience of insight, which will free us from this suffering and this confusion in the world. Dogen saw that, well, our experience of dukkha is caused by our projecting on the world our ideas of how it's supposed to be and what we want and what we don't want. We're measuring things and calculating all the time. This is good enough, it's bad enough, it's pleasurable enough, it's not pleasure, this is better than that. So I'm always making choices automatically, being steered by really unexamined processes that do this and that are characterized by I'm always at a distance from my experience. And so he said, well, what's the difference then between practicing that sort of meditation and the rest of our life that causes dukkha? He called that that sort of meditation learning meditation. And his own approach was very different. He thought, well, the learning meditation has some good aspects, but that's not it. If you could, if you've got a chance to open to Fukan Zazengi in your chant books, you can see that those themes coming up when, at the very beginning, when Dogen says the way is originally perfect and all-pervading, how could it be contingent on practice and realization? The true vehicle is self-sufficient. What need is there for special effort? Indeed, the whole body is free from dust. Who could believe in a means to brush it clean? It's never apart from this very place. What is the use of traveling around to practice? So that's that point he was making, that the world is already here. We're part of it. We are a part of this transcendent, ultimate, complete, free, peaceful world. And yet, so if that's the case, why do we need to travel from monastery to monastery? Why do we practice this, have this practice of sweeping dust from the mind, to brush the mind clean? If the truth is never apart from where we are here and now, then why do we have to go someplace else? But then he says, if there's a hair's breadth deviation, it is like the gap between heaven and earth. If the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. So I think there's a little dig there, isn't there, in referring not just to our ordinary experience of life, that we get lost in confusion by picking out aspects of our experience for attachment or aversion, craving or desire or anxiety and fear. And he sort of then follows by suggesting, well, that's really what's happening in much of religious practice. When he says that, suppose you are confident in your understanding and rich in enlightenment, gaining the wisdom that knows at a glance, attaining the way and clarifying the mind, arousing an aspiration to reach for the heavens, you are playing in the entrance way, you still are short of the vital path of emancipation. So even our religious practice can be an expression of confusion and delusion and suffering. His approach was to say something different, that what we don't need is some sort of transcendent vision of the world. We need to be this perfect world that we are, that we already are. Instead of, if we are part of this formless, expansive, perfect thing, then why are we creating this identity of ourselves, a fixed identity of someone chasing after something else? And so he says, he suggests that a couple of paragraphs down, put aside the intellectual practice of investigating words and chasing phrases, and learn to take the backward step that turns the light and shines it inward. Body and mind of themselves will drop away, and your original face will manifest. If you want to attain suchness, practice suchness immediately. So he's saying, I don't have to take these steps of learning. I don't have to go through this long training to attain some special state, some special understanding. I can do this directly. I don't have to have this long training. I can do this right now. And his message then becomes, Zazen itself is the practice of dropping off this clinging, dropping off this attachment to specific parts of our experience. Don't chase it. Awaken to our clinging, and it will, and we will not be caught up in it. It will fall away. And at that moment of letting go of the clinging and opening to our life as it is right now, we are embodying the broad, perfect world that we are an expression of and we are a point of. So he goes on, if you want, this is frequently is, this world that's viewed like this is sometimes called suchness. There are two principal phrases. There are a number of different phrases for this. The world, the entire world, the collection of all the things on it, in it, the things that are not things. when the focus is on things as not things, what we see as things are perceived as things are not really things because they're really made of parts. They're compounded. They also change. And they aren't fixed. They aren't just what they are. Douglas Floyd is not Douglas Floyd because of his Douglas Floydness. Douglas Floyd is Douglas Floyd because of causes and conditions and my past, which has brought me here, and the fact that there's air, and my identity here is right here in this room. I exist. You can only understand me here, at least in part, to large part, in relation to everyone in this room and the circumstances of this room. So, in order to step away, we can simply step away from the habit of reaching out and ignoring this fact that we're here. This is fine. We are part of this expansive, unified world, and now I'm just a hungry, frightened person, ego here. We can see through that and just embody the reality that we are. So he says, if you want to attain suchness, practice suchness immediately. And suchness is that we aren't empty, that this larger world, the entire universe, is, well, it's empty of things. It is a brilliant presence. It is reality that appears right in front of us and appears in us. That is suchness. If you want to attain suchness, do it immediately. That's who you are already. You simply have to become who you are, what you are. So he says, if you want to attain suchness, practice suchness immediately. For practicing Zen, a quiet room is suitable, and so on and so on. And then says, do not think good or bad. Do not judge true or false. Give up the operations of mind, intellect, and consciousness. Stop measuring with thoughts, ideas, and views. Have no designs on becoming a Buddha. How could that be limited to sitting or lying down? So it's not necessary for us to pursue some special state to become a Buddha. We need to stop thinking about how things are good or bad, what they can do for me, how they're going to harm me, and relax. But how do we do that? How do we do that? We can't stop the mind. It's not possible to stop the mind. It goes. But he does say you can put that to one side. You can step back. So he says, once you've adjusted your posture, take a breath and exhale fully. Rock your body right and left and settle into steady, immovable sitting. Think of not thinking. Not thinking. What kind of thinking is that? Beyond thinking. That's the essential art of Zazen. That sounds incredibly cryptic, and it is as cryptic to people who read Japanese as it is for us. The beyond thinking is one translation of a phrase. Thinking is shiryo. That's the word that he used. But shiryo is a certain kind of thinking. It's calculating thinking. It's measuring thinking. It's things that are good or bad, better or worse. I choose this, I choose that. Not thinking is fushiryo. And beyond thinking, non-thinking, is hishiryo. Hishiryo and fushiryo, if it, out of this context, would mean essentially the same thing. But the difference is that fushiryo, not thinking, means no active mental activities going on. Non-thinking, he's referring to the thinking goes on, but I am not intentionally thinking. I am not engaged or caught up in the thinking. That's the experience I think that you probably had, at least for part of the meditation period. The thoughts and emotions and feelings were coming up, and you were watching them. They would come up. They could be painful. They could be pleasant. They could be boring. They could be frustrating. But they would come up and go away, go up, and come away. But you weren't involved in them in the same way. It wouldn't be true to say I was in, this was an act of volition, that was going on. That is what Dogen is saying. Apply that to all of your mental experience, all of your thinking, all of your feeling, all of your judgments. Let them come up, let them go away. And in doing that, you've stepped away from them. You are not clinging anymore. The clinging thinking comes, it goes away, it doesn't have the same grasp. Your mind is active, but it does not involve you. And that's why Dogen can say that the Zazen I speak of is not meditation practice. It is not learning meditation. It's not the practice of learning to concentrate in order to eventually to calm your mind and eventually develop wisdom. It is simply, right, the Dharma gate, the teaching of joyful ease. There is no difficulty to it. It's simply doing it directly, letting it go, viewing it right now, waking up. It's the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. So when we give up the clinging activity and this identification of ourselves as an object of, that's desiring or fearing, we drop off this false identity and return to this person we are right now. It doesn't mean that we don't think, we don't feel, we don't communicate, we don't understand, but it does mean that we are back in this moment, as part of this moment, we are part of this world. So in that very moment, in that experience, probably what since everyone in this room experiences it, I'm sure you did too, you would sit, you would feel your breath, something happened. Sometime in the future we go, I've been daydreaming, I'm back. That waking up is a moment of having dropped off the clinging of thought. And that moment is freedom. You've dropped off the clinging, you are back. That is the awakening. Not some exotic transformative experience, but true freedom from the suffering and confusion that makes up so much of our life. And Dogen uses then one of his favorite metaphors, that if you grasp the point, if you learn to do this waking up and recognize the significance of this point, then you're like a dragon gaining the water, like a tiger taking to the mountains. These are examples in Chinese folklore. Dragons live in the water. It's not like in the West, but that's in the open water. They swim freely. There are no boundaries. The tiger has taken to the mountain. He's left. He's escaped from the restraints of having been captured, and he has now returned to the mountain, and he's roaming freely in the mountain. We are free when we wake up and enter the Dharma gate of joyful ease. So what does this come to? What it comes to is that when we're sitting in meditation, any attempt at all to cause something to happen is just like other activity in our lives. If it's an attempt to become calm or to wake up or to have a clear mind, I'm going to focus very hard on my breath and something good will come of that, is exactly like the behavior in the rest of our lives. It's deluded thinking sitting on your cushion. There are other times when Dogen would say, you're wasting time on your cushion. I wouldn't go that far, but to make the point rhetorically, he will say that. So what he teaches you is that letting go of the measuring, the comparing, the yes or no, the good, the bad, the better, the worse, it's non-doing. He's practicing non-doing, letting it go. And even that can be pretty confusing, right? How do you let go as a matter of will? And how easy is it to go, you know what, I'll feel a whole lot better if I just sit here and let go. I'm letting go now. That's not it, right? The challenging part of Zazen, the practice itself, is simply sitting here without moving upright with our eyes open and letting the mind go. It is like putting the car engine into neutral. It's still running and running and running, but it's not engaged and it's not pushing you around. It's not shaping your understanding of who you are and what's going on in your world. There are tools that we use to help us do that. And some frequently, like when we talked about Zazen earlier this evening, one of the most frequent tools is being aware of the breath. But in doing that, we don't focus on the breath or concentrate on the breath to try and become clear or calm or collected to change our mind in some way. It's really, how am I breathing? I'm breathing fine. How am I breathing? I'm breathing fine. And that becomes then not an attempt to manipulate the mind, an attempt to have some experience, but the expression of, if you like, the celebration of being here in this moment, the enjoyment of this moment. Here I am, here I am, here it is. Here I am, all of this is it. This is the fundamental reality of our lives, this, of which I am part. I don't exist apart from this. So, you're done now, you're enlightened. You can go back to class tomorrow. You don't have to go back to class, it's done. So, I think I'll leave it there. I'm sure you have some questions or some comments. Dylan.
The question that I think could be fun to play with is the idea of like sweeping the mind. Is it sweeping the mind or is it more like taking a stick and you know through practice kind of turning it into a bow, you know?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's another favorite story that Dogen has that appears in all of the major koan collections of, you know, polishing the tile, which is that the great Zen master Mazu, a Chinese Zen master who lived in the 10th century, was walking around the monastery and saw a monk sitting and meditating, and he said, "So what are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I'm studying to become a Buddha." And so Mazu picked up a roof tile, because there was always construction going on at those old monasteries. They'd fall apart and get rebuilt. And he starts scrubbing away at the tile. And the monk looks over and says, "What are you doing?" And he says, "Oh, I'm polishing the tile. I'm making a jewel." And he says, "Well, you can't make a jewel out of a tile." And he says, "Well, then you can't make a Buddha out of a person." You know, it's not a matter of becoming transformed, but even to become what you are. This is an exercise of becoming what you are rather than transforming yourself. And so the Zen literature is full of images of polishing a mirror, making a jewel, sweeping. There's a lot of sweeping in the Zen stories, right? Getting the dust off of your mind, getting rid of those nasty defilements of lust and fear and hatred and anger. But Dogen would not take that position. It's interesting. He wouldn't say, "You can't get rid of that. You have to sit with it. Let it go and recognize that it is part of this. You don't have to be controlled by this, but you do have to recognize that it's there." So it is shaping it. It's becoming, it's expressing what you are, what is, more clearly for yourself. Wayne.
To build on that, it seems like I like the dust metaphor, because the dust is something that's added on. It's not the object that accumulates dust, it's the dust is something on top of the object. mm-hmm. It's accumulating dust. And so that's our thinking about our thinking is the dust. Our clinging is the dust that's on top of us, the object, accumulating it. And so Zazen is brushing it off, but you can't ever really brush it off because it's always going to accumulate dust. Right? So long as it exists, dust will always accumulate on any object. Right? And so brush it off in Zazen, know that the dust will come back, recognize that you are not the dust. Mm-hmm. But it will never be gone.
Yeah, somebody had a hand up over here. I could have sworn. Nope. Okay.
How was your class?
Hard.
Hard on the knees.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's. It takes a while for your legs to get stretched out. And so if you want to keep doing it, it's all of the traditional runner's stretches are exactly the thing to relax your legs and allow you to sit cross-legged for a long time like that. But, you know, nobody sits like that naturally. And there are stories about Chinese monasteries before the revolution. You know, people who had studied, who had been ordained, again, when they were small children, they got older and they went to the big, big meditation monasteries, and they would have periods of 3 months twice a year when they would sit in meditation up to 12 hours a day. When they'd start those, usually they had about 25% of the people who signed up for the three-month practice period would disappear in the first 48 hours because it hurt. But then they would get used to it and be able to endure it, enjoy it even. Okay. Well, if there are no further comments or questions,